Welcome to the Man Under Construction Podcast. It's another episode of Man Under Construction. Thank you so much for joining me once again, for stopping by. And thank you for all your support so far, for listening to the podcast, for responding on the Instagram page, which is at Man Under Construction. And it's been a wild ride. This last episode, we had our guest, Chad, who is at A New Kind of Man. He joined us and he shared parts of his life and we talked about different things. It was an awesome conversation. It was epic and I really enjoyed it. And I hope to do more stuff like that. I hope you enjoyed it as well. And it was insightful and it enriched your life in a different way. And today, this podcast, this episode, I have another friend of mine joining us. His name is Chris, and he is at Undisputed Porn Recovery. So he joins us now via Zoom, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Chris, thank you for joining the program today. Thank you for going out of your extremely busy schedule to stop by and say hi and tell us a little bit about yourself. And Chris is, you can find him on Instagram at Undisputed Porn Recovery. And he's doing a lot of great things. And I wanted to have you on the show today because this is something that's very dear to my heart. This is something that I personally went through, that I struggled with, that almost took everything that meant anything to me. It almost destroyed my life. But it's amazing through Instagram how you can connect with people that have fought the same battles and have gone through the same thing you have. But like I've said before, two stories are never the same. And I wanted to have Chris on here to share his story, because perhaps maybe his story can reach someone that I can't. So Chris, thank you once again. That was kind of a big intro, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. That was a lovely introduction. Yeah, so I'm Chris. First and foremost, I'm a recovered porn and gaming addict. The founder of Undisputed Porn Recovery, that's in the business of online addiction recovery. And since recently, we're partnering with Twin Rivers Rehab to be able to provide residential treatment as well. So that's basically where we are at the moment.
And that's awesome. I saw that you partnered up with Twin, and you're going bigger than I am at this point, but helping through a facility and partnering up with someone to be able to help more people. That's amazing. And that's awesome. And I support what you're doing 100%. So before we jump in, we can see where you're at right now. You've overcome, you know, a big chunk of your life that was stuck in something. You've been able to go through it. With every great success, there is an equal amazing story behind it. And it can be a story of loss and pain or different situations, but we all have a story. And that's what I want to get to. I want to hear the story, the one that got you to where you're at right now. I know that's very heavy, right? I just threw it all out on you.
Yeah, that's really heavy. I totally agree. Behind anything, there is something profound that's happened. Sparks that fire that gets you going in with that amount of passion in a specific direction. So I totally agree. And for me, that journey begins all the way back to my childhood. Growing up, I had a very strong need to escape and to be appreciated, feeling that I could master something and be good at it and feel appreciated for it, because I was there was a lot of struggles in my childhood home. My mother was suffering from more than 30 depressions while I was growing up. I was the oldest of three, so I kind of guided her through that. She obviously had help from doctors and whatnot, but I felt that it was my job to get her through it as well. And my father was working two jobs to provide do his part of it. So he was very distant, although it was important to get to provide it. Bottom line for me as a child, he was not home, and she was, but she was not feeling good. So it was very, it was too heavy of emotions to process at that age. That there was a lot of tension between them because of this. Her, she constantly getting sick, and he not being there. Yeah, so that fueled my intense need of escaping. I didn't want a part of this. I felt deep shame. I didn't want anyone to know about the truth of what's going on, because my family from the outside, the facade was really great. It's this family with young kids, and we were having, you know, family dinners. There was not a lot of alcohol there. Just there was never, ever, not even a bottle of beer at home. It was just bought for the occasion. So on paper, this was the great family. But I knew the truth, and I wanted it to stay within those walls. And so did my father. And I could feel that it was also that untold pressure of do not burst this bubble, you know. And it was too heavy of a burden to carry.
Especially for a young man that you were at that time. Yeah, that's a lot of pressure.
Definitely. Me and my brother, we were just about 2 years apart. So we started off at best friends and brothers, secondly. We were in that together.
Around what age was this?
I was around five when I was like aware of this is all the things that's going on. And we were living very close to the woods. So me and my brother, we just head out. We were out in the woods playing all day, you know, just getting back when it's time for dinner. They had some kind of a cowbell that rang through the neighborhood. So this is the Larsons having dinner now. Why don't everyone join us?
Let everybody know we're having dinner right now.
But if that bell didn't ring, we were out in the woods playing. So that's just hiding out there. If I was inside, it was either because the family was eating or I was hiding in my room drawing. That was my first escape. I knew I loved music and drawing, because I could just, it was my own world. I could shut everyone and everything out. It was my first outlet for that. So that was really great. And then I met a friend. We've been friends ever since. And we were also out in the woods playing from five and, you know, through the entire childhood. Around when we were around seven, we took a path in the woods where we had never been before. So we were always out in those woods, but this, we just felt like, okay, we need to do this now. It was past a mountain and then up on a short hillside covered with trees, so we could see like a it looked like a fort to us, like some kind of a commando fort. It was too cool to be true. Like what is this? Some wooden cottage in one of the trees. So and apparently the hunters call this a blind.
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. So it was our first spotting of a blind in the woods, and it was truly amazing. So we just climbed those steps up through that hole. All the walls, they were just covered in pictures. Magazines were stacked on top of each other on the entire floor there, and it was pornographic material. So we had no idea what to make of this.
I think it's safe to assume that there wasn't a lot of hunting going on up there.
No, I that also seems like a facade. Someone is going out with his bow or whatnot, but that's not the point of that trip, I would assume. Yeah, so we, like I said, me and my buddy, we were 7 years old. We enjoyed the outdoors, riding bikes, you know, catching frogs in the rain. We had no idea what this was, but we were very quick also to determine that this is best kept a secret. We don't wanna. Yes, we came back there a few times. Mostly because it was such a cool cottage, but it was also that strange element of what in the world is this? Why would anyone have this in the woods? What's the point of it all? So that was strangely introduced at 7 years old, pornographic material, and it was also that like added to my burden I was already carrying. I was carrying that facade of my family and now this, together with my buddy. It was not like we had found our own lake where we could just play around. It was just a positive kind of, let's keep this a secret because it's too great, or a blueberry field or a mushroom where you can just pick your own. It was not just a positive thing to keep. We knew that this is a bad thing.
Yeah.
So that just added to that, to the burden. And I was also, you know, I was born in 1985. So it was just when video games and the internet started booming.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we were playing, me myself and with his friend, we were enjoying video games more and more. Yeah,
online gaming.
Not to start with. It was just Nintendo. You know, shoot the ducks, jumping Mario.
Yeah, online didn't come on till way later.
Yeah, that was later. We didn't even have the internet at this time. But when I actually dug. Just coming here, there was a changing moment for that as well. One summer when my friend was at his mother's brother, nephew?
And uncle?
Uncle? Yeah, his uncle were having a birthday party in the summer. So it was just this great barbecue. There was, like the summer perfect party. But he was, I think he was 8 at the time. So he was very fascinated by the fire in the grill. So he was very close. And his uncle were in charge of the meat, the man of the hour.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that incredibly hard task that was laid upon him there. But he was very... he was not careful at all. So he actually added the flammable liquid onto the fire when my friend was actually standing right there. So he actually lit up and took fire, taken to the hospital. And to this day, you can see all over his left arm and up to the ear is still.
And this was a triggering point now that you're saying that you look back, this was an accident or an event that happened that contributed to what exactly?
Oh yeah, definitely. But this party, his uncle's party was happening at the end of the spring, just when summer is bursting out. But since he had a severe burn from his hand to his ear, we couldn't be out in the sun. We had to hide out. And he obviously received some, composition money for this, so he a part of that he spent on one of those PlayStations. We could play the Gran Turismo, some car games and a horror game, and so this was actually forced upon us. We spent an entire, because I wanted to be with him. This was my best buddy. We were more or less like glued together, one of those guys. But we were forced to stay out of the sun. So we just played and played and played, and I grew a stronger interest in it. But I still had all my interest in the outdoors, being with friends and all of that. But it grew a deeper interest for games. but it was kind of kept in balance because of everything else that was significant. But then, and I was very, I've always been very shy in front of girls and women. I had no way of being myself in front of a girl. I could barely answer the question, "Do you have a pen?" That was stressful enough. Trying to be around women and flirt with, that was completely out of the question for me. I was way too shy and insecure, and there was no way of doing that in a good way. Yeah. So I don't consider it part of the addiction, but at a very young age, I repeatedly watched porn. So the family home started having internet from the time I was 10 or 11, and I quickly found my ways into these sites. And so I was frequently doing it, but it was not in an addictive way.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that. It's interesting that, like you said, you couldn't communicate very well with women. And viewing this adult material bypassed all that. It was like a shortcut.
Yeah.
You got to the end without having to go through the process of talking and getting to know someone. You don't have to be embarrassed. So you got the end result without having to go through all the stuff of feeling embarrassed and being shy. It made it easy.
Indeed, it made it easy and available at a high rate as well.
And I noticed too, from hearing other stories and hearing other people that are addicted to that, a lot of them will tell you that they were shy around women. They were intimidated by them. They would fall apart when they would try to talk to them. And this was a way to get what they wanted to a certain extent without having to go through the process. It might not be a big contributing factor, but it's definitely part of the puzzle that contributes to being addicted.
Absolutely. My mother being sick and my father working. So we never had this talk about how you know, about love or sex or none of that. That was just, and that was also part of the facade. That's not part of, you know, growing up. So I had to figure it out myself. And I'm a very emotional, sensitive guy. So I loved romantic music. That was not part of my facade. I would rather die than tell my friends what I was listening to Celine Dion and all that kind of music. So I loved romance.
You know what? I can edit that part out about. I can edit that part out about Celine Dion, just in case, if you want to make sure you want to maintain your manhood. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just totally kidding.
But at the time, I wouldn't stand for it. I would rather have whatever comes instead. So I was very fascinated about the concept of love, and I wanted to feel it. I wanted to have my own experience with it. But I had no idea how to even begin. Where do you start? Do you shake hands? Do you talk? How do you even... No, so there was none of that. And also having that expressway to porn. So yeah. Every time so there was a lot of, you know, from the age of 10 and up, you notice girls, especially in school, like, okay, tomorrow I could spend an entire evening lying in bed. Like, tomorrow, yeah, I'm going to talk to her. I'm going to ask her that. I'm going to show her this and that. And then the day after, you know, none of that happens. Like, okay, shit, no, plan B. I'm just going to ignore her for the rest of the day, and I can come back strong tomorrow.
Abandon ship. Yeah, you abandon ship. You jump off that really quick.
Yeah, and that was done for, you know, through my teens. I didn't even show interest. I couldn't do that in a positive way.
And throughout your teen years, were you getting more, was it becoming more frequent, the viewing and participating in pornography?
Indeed, it did. It was at least pre-teens, it was at least a monthly occurrence watching porn, intensifying a lot more when I started playing more advanced online games, because then my whole world shifted basically. When I tried a specific game, it opened up a new universe for me. I could be, it showed me that I could be all these things that I wanted to be, a man with a skill. I've always been fascinated by, you know, blacksmiths or glassblowers, someone with a very clear skill. You know, you take a chunk of nothing and you produce a perfect product, like a blacksmith or a glassblower. And in this game, I could be that. I could be very good at a skill, and that was my, that's what I focused on, being very good. And it's noticeable in the community. So others that wanted to be very good, they joined in. So I was now a part of a community where everyone know that, okay, if you want someone that's good at this, you go to him. This was completely new for me. I was clumsy. I was, you know, shy, and being an obvious choice when you need a specific skill, that's a first for me. So I was just mesmerized by this entire community and the of the online gaming world. And that's when I shifted from just having that as one of my interests, along with, I was very, very into working out. My father was a policeman and a taxi driver, but first and foremost, he was a policeman. And that's, growing up, that was my only clear goal and vision. I knew I wanted to be a policeman like him.
Right.
So every move that I made with a long-term goal, a long-term effect, was towards that goal. I knew I wanted a good health, a good shape, because I wanted to get in, and I wanted specific language skills that's required. But anything outside of that, that was just not, if it didn't speak to that goal, I didn't do it. But as soon as I stepped into this online gaming world, I stopped working out. Up until that point, I had a very good schedule for the day. I was getting into bed in good hours, so I was getting good sleep, and I always work out like 3 to 4 times a week. But all of that stopped. I didn't work out anymore, and I had longer and longer nights. And this, I obviously lied about this to my parents. They knew that I was going to bed, but I just, when I knew that everyone was asleep, I just turned on the computer again and played. Yeah.
That sounds, you know, like a lot of kids now.
You find your ways, you know. That's I stopped working out, and I stopped caring about my, or I didn't stop caring about my friends, but they, I believe that, you know,
did they take like a backseat in
pursuit
of your online avatar?
They were still in my head, they were still important, but my prioritizations were computer game first. And since I was always doing that, that ended up there was just no time left for them.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them, because they, you know, they just grow tired of calling someone that doesn't answer. And
yeah, no, I understand that.
Himself. Yeah. So that's just, that happens over time, that isolation. They just, okay. Because at first, you're still an obvious choice. Yeah, we're going to call Chris because we're going out. Or should we call him because we're going to play football? Yeah, sure, do it. But over time, that's just, don't even bother. He's not going to pick up, until that point where you're not even in the equation anymore. You're not even spoken about anymore. So that happens over time, obviously. I isolated myself from my friends, and I performed worse and worse in school, as my grades were affected. my gaming intensified to every day, several hours every day.
And was this along with pornography as well, or just gaming?
Indeed, that was like a liberation as well, because now when I just accepted the online gaming world for what it is, it's gonna isolate me from the regular world, but that's something that I wanted to do anyway. I wanted to escape, and this allowed me to escape. And so that was like a justification for me. Since I am now living this world, I need porn for my satisfaction, for my, you know, sexual needs. Right. So that's a very easy justification for me to do. Like, okay, from now on, it's okay, because now I need it, because now I'm not even living in that world.
Yeah.
So it's a very convenient lie for me to tell myself, and I live that lie for many, many years to come.
And the strange thing is, especially in the online gaming community, especially with people that like game hardcore, maybe perhaps what you were experiencing is tied into pornography too, because like the very thing you said, you know, you're so consumed with the video game, but you're still a man, you still got some needs. So you just fast track all that and start engaging in adult material, and it's just easy. You get the satisfaction without having to deal with commitment, a relationship, communication.
Indeed, you could rationalize it to be sloppy with food. Instead of getting enough sleep and eating healthy, you could just trash all of that and have a Red Bull and a coffee, and you're good. Yeah. So the porn, that's like your sexual Red Bull. You can just fast track all of it, like you said, instead of having that romance and that connection and ultimately having an important relationship with sexual moments as well. But that's not all of it.
How many years was, how long did this go on? How many years were you involved with gaming? And
yeah, that went on from when it was really intensified, from like 16, 17 until I was 29.
Really? 29?
Yeah, definitely. When I after military service, I had a talk with my father, and I asked him, to be honest, like, should I be a policeman? And he just, without blinking, he said, no, you're too much of a sensitive guy. They're gonna rough up your edges. You're not gonna come out. You're gonna come in Christopher and out come something else after living that. It's not to say it's a bad world, but he wanted to protect me from it at least. And his words were my world. So that was, even though that was my only long-term goal, I knew that I had to let it go. And from that moment on, I felt like, because prior to that, I felt like I was floating just above the surface of the water. Down below is my mother's depression, all of the aggressions at home. But I could float above it because I had my goal and I had a clear direction. This is where I'm going. Apparently, it's going to be hell to get there, but I know where I'm going. So yeah. I could float. But from that moment on, I just went way down below. I had no direction. Being a man now, I just moved out, took whatever job I could find to pay my bills, and I had no intention of being good at it or getting a better job. I just know that this is going to pay my bills and it's going to get me time to go into my world, in my gaming and in my gaming and my porn. So that I just lived that like in complete darkness for 2 years. And I found a woman. We lived together for 5 years.
Was this the start of that turning point for you? Was this the start of you starting to realize, I got to get out of this stuff before it destroys me?
No, that was, I was just living that. I had such extreme dopamine levels. I was alternating this game and porn like every waking hour. If I wasn't working, I was either gaming or watching porn. She was studying at a university, so she had a busy schedule as well, and that kind of allowed me to escape into my own world because she had these tremendous studies.
Yeah, she was preoccupied.
Yeah, definitely. She was getting her master's, so there was just no end to the studies, which mm-hmm. means that there's no end for my possibility to play or watch porn. So that ended.
So when was the actual turning point for you? When was that moment where like I gotta dig myself out or I'll destroy myself?
Yeah, that turning point happened where that relationship ended. It lasted for 5 years, and I had not changed anything during the relationship. But after it broke down, I realized that okay, this gaming can't go on. It's consuming me completely. I have no direction. I have no vision of where I want to be. And it's just destroyed the one romantic relationship that I've had so far. So that's the change that I made. I fought off my video games, but the porn stayed. And I still didn't have any conception at all of me being addicted to porn. That wasn't even a thought in my head just yet. I knew that the gaming is consuming my time and it's consuming me and makes me irritable every time something shows up. Like the 25th every month, that was a trigger for me because that's that little window of time where you have to open the envelopes and pay your bills.
Right.
That's time that I could be playing. So that's how much I played actually. So I got that out of the equation and I was still watching porn and I was a single man for a year. So the porn actually intensified. At the time I didn't really think of it, but the time I was usually playing, I was now watching porn. So that was basically what I did.
You just transferred it.
Yeah, I just transferred it. I didn't realize it. I just thought that because I also added working out now because I was single and I wanted to do it and I was free of gaming, I thought. So I started working out, but also intensifying the porn use.
Yeah.
And after a year of that, I found my current wife, Maria. And that was nothing like the first relationship. This was from the very first time that I saw her, I know that this is how it's supposed to feel. This is what life is about. She just opened my eyes, not only to her, but she opened my eyes to the world. Like, this is what life is about. And I could sincerely feel joy in everything we were doing. Just sitting on a bench, watching the moon, that was meaningful. That was not something I would never, ever spend a second doing on my own up until this point. But with her, it was just so natural. Yeah, this is a beautiful thing. And of course, I want to watch it with her. So everything just fell into place. And I was so happy. And I was as happy and as in love that I was equally scared because I knew that I didn't see my porn as an addiction, but I knew it to be an enemy of this potential relationship.
Yeah.
I could foresee that. But I promised myself like, okay, this is not something that's going to ruin this relationship. I'm not going to let that happen. So I promised myself that I would quit. And I sincerely meant it. I gave it my all to end it, but I couldn't. I thought,
which is the case for a lot of people. Me too. You know, I'm going to quit, but it's not that easy.
So past in my life, I've smoked through my teen years, and being Swedish, we have snus, like tobacco you put under your lip. Mm-hmm. So I've done that and I quit that. And as long as you're in it, it's okay because you have that convenient lie. I can quit whenever I want to. So
yeah,
that's the lie that you carry. Like the one I had with gaming. Like it's okay for me to watch porn because I'm gaming instead of living. So this is what I do.
Yeah.
So up until this point, I didn't. That's when I realized that I was addicted to porn. Now that I had quit smoking and snus before, so I knew the feeling. Like, okay, I want to do this, but it's way too hard for me to do it. It's not just wearing new type of clothing. You just do it. This was it had a pull on me that I couldn't foresee.
Yeah.
So I slipped up every 2 or 3 weeks. I came back, even though every time I promised myself and I meant it sincerely that this is the last time. Like now I'm giving it my all. I'm going to do it now. And I'm so ready to quit this, but it didn't happen. And that went on secretly for, I think, half a year. And in the middle of the summer, she found porn in my phone when her daughter, she borrowed my phone in the car to watch just YouTube videos.
Right.
And it wasn't porn that she could see, but it was that kind of commercials that my wife recognized that you don't get this in your phone unless you're in the wrong place on the internet.
Yeah.
She's did some digging in the phone and in the pads and in the computer. And yeah, she could see that this is way too much to be just something that he does occasionally. This is everywhere all of the time. So that more or less crushed her world. So we were in this beautiful place where we're just, it's just us up in the clouds, falling in love together, living this new life together. She had her struggles as well, and we found this new life together that we committed to.
Yeah.
We could see that me, from my addiction side, and her, she felt free. She felt like she could be all of herself with me, and I was so proud of that. Her nickname in Sweden would be Maria den Fria. That would be like Maria the Free, because she can be all of herself.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so sweet, and I took pride in knowing that I was part of her feeling that way. And all of that world, like Maria the Free and everything, is just blown away. So now we have this elephant in the room to fight off instead.
Yeah.
And I told her that I really want to quit, and I promised her to do it. So now we were in this together, and I still couldn't. And the emotions that emerged in her were the same as if I would have a physical affair outside of the relationship, like the depth of the betrayal and the crushed intimacy that's at the core of her being. That's where it is, the crushed intimacy and the depth of the betrayal. She made no difference to a physical sexual act or my kind of usage in porn. That was just equal.
Yeah, no, and I can understand that because I was there too. Yeah. The pain and the betrayal is equivalent, maybe sometimes even more than the physical.
Yeah.
So it destroys them.
And I think part of that is, so we made the decision to carry on. And when you do that in a physical betrayal, you also decide that, okay, this other person or those other persons are no longer a part of my life.
Exactly.
But this material, they're always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
One click away on the phone or in the computer, or you can't just say that, okay, porn is not going to be accessible from our home. It's always, you can't get out. You would have to live in the woods to
no internet.
So I think that's a part of it, knowing that it's, even though we're not participating, it's there.
Yeah.
Always watching, basically. So we now, she entered this fight and we mutually did everything that we could. Her fighting her emotional betrayal and me trying to fight this off. As well as trying to rebuild this trust, which were so hard because all my actions didn't point in the direction that I wanted to save our relationship, because I always slipped up back to porn.
Right.
So whatever I said, I wasn't acting in that direction, you know, visible to her anyway, because she couldn't see me quitting. I wasn't done yet. You know, and I was so like desperate. I couldn't, I just wanted to scream, get the hell out. I couldn't.
Yeah, I know. Yes. I feel
to shut it out.
Exactly. Yeah. You're like, you feel like you're in prison and you're screaming to get out, but you can't. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been there. I've been there when you participate in the act and then you feel guilt, shame, and you're just screaming, you're desperate, if you're full of despair. Yeah, man, I can relate to that. I can relate to that screaming on the inside to get out.
Yeah, definitely. And it can shift so quickly. Like today, you feel on top of the world, like this is not ever going to affect me again. The next day, something happens, you feel this darkness coming, poking on your back, like, okay, let's just do this once. And then, like you said, afterwards, there is no comparison. You feel like the worst guy on earth.
Yeah.
Every single time. And especially now, I felt that that shame, guilt, and remorse before. But now that every slip up led to a new promise towards my wife, that was very much intensifying the shame and the guilt, because now I was breaking promises towards someone else as well, not only me. So now I'm not even a man of my word anymore, which have been very important to me through my life. If someone asks someone something of me and the answer is yes, my answer is not always yes, but if it is yes, it's going to be done. I want people to know that if my answer is yes, it will be done. Yes. But I couldn't stick to my word anymore. And that alone was killing me. And then, you know, the rest of it all. Also, in the middle of this mix, we found out that we were expecting a child. I was so ready to be a father. I was just blown away. That was the most magical moment in my life. When I could see that first blurry picture of a blob that is apparently my daughter, that was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
I agree. It is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And
the first thing we did, we named her Maxine, because that's Maria always knew that if she would have another little girl, she would want her to be named Maxine. Mm-hmm. And I had no relation to the name. I had never heard it, but it was the most beautiful name to this beautiful blob. So it felt so natural. Of course she's Maxine. That's who she is. So I made a promise, like the ultimate promise, like before Maxine arrives, I'm going to be free from this porn. I'm going to do this now. So I have this ultimate deadline of 9 months, mm-hmm. minus the time up until the first ultrasound, the first checkup when you get this picture. And I was really doing everything I thought. I was looking things up. I was trying methods. I know that stress was one of my big triggers. So I tried ways of managing that, and I tried to just stay calm. And then I also tried not feeling anything, and that was the worst path. That was when I slipped up the most, when I just tried to numb myself, to just shut off.
Yeah.
Because then everything just comes like a crash on the highway. The next disaster comes one after another.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was trying and failing, but desperate to get this done. And when she finally arrived and I wasn't free from porn anymore, I had broken that promise that I made on my daughter's life. And that's when it all shifted, when we decided that it was a mutual decision that I can't, you know, my trial and error are gone. We need help with this. I can't do this on my own. Living in Sweden, it's actually not even considered an official addiction here. So finding professional help turned out to be harder than I would expect. Our taxes being where they are, we are just so used to whatever care you need. Like here in Sweden, you're gonna get it. But mm-hmm. here, nothing was available. And there was a few. And the first one we tried was not working out at all. But the second one we tried really helped, and I dedicated myself to educate myself during that time. Yeah, I came out without porn on the other side, and it's to this day I feel that's the greatest battle that I've fought in my entire life.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You have to give it your all.
Yeah, exactly. You have to give everything you got inside you to overcome something like that, and especially when you've been in it for so many years.
Yeah.
It takes a tremendous amount of will and strength, and not just that, but help, outside help.
Definitely.
Outside help. So you're out of this now. You have come out victorious. You are a victorious Chris.
Yes, indeed. Now I stand on top of that mountain.
Yes, sir. And now you're helping others, which is amazing, which is just incredible. And that's why I support you 100%, because I've been down that road, and it's a lonely, dark road. You destroy relationships. You destroy yourself. And man, it's an amazing accomplishment or amazing achievement when you're able to overcome that and not just hoard that victory, but to take your story and start sharing it with others to help them out and hopefully help some people avoid it. And that's what I see that you're doing. You joined up with, you partnered up with someone to get this material out there. And I know you got a website, so you wanna drop that in. Any resource material, anything? Where can people find you? To be, you offer also online coaching. So go ahead and tell us about that. Tell us where people can find you and what they need to do.
Yeah, definitely. Like you're saying, sharing this story, that's where the magic happens. Giving back, because the ultimate lie that any addiction will tell you is that you're in it alone and you have to get out of it alone. But the magic happens when you actually ask for help. There is so much help to get from others in the same situation and from professional offering help. And me, you can find on undisputedrecovery.com. I have a blog there where I share my insights, and you can also find my recovery options there. And yeah, we have teamed up with Twin Rivers Rehab, which allows us to provide unique packages, because my business alone, what I do there is it's individual recovery sessions during or done by video calls, so they can be done from anywhere in the world. But with partnership with Twin Rivers, on top of the individual video calls, the online sessions, we can also provide residential treatments packages. So at the start of it, there is a initial session online with me where we set up an emergency plan, and people travel to Twin Rivers facilities in South Africa, and they do their recovery there with others in the same situation, and they get back home after the amount of weeks they have agreed to stay there. And then they commence online after treatment with me, based individual based programs based on the progress they made on during the treatment, and also who they are and where they're coming from. So that's the unique package that the partnership ends up doing, and we're very proud of it.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And I'll go ahead and I'll put a link to your website and resource material as well. But I want to thank you so much for being honest, for being vulnerable, for sharing your story. Yeah, it's not easy to be able to share your story, to show your scars, but you're willing to do that for the greater good, you know, to help people out there stuck in the same situation. So I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me, to talk to us, and hopefully we can do it again. I'd like to catch up again and hear how that aspect of your kind of like the recovery aspect out of the resources, how that's going, what improvements you've made. So hopefully soon we can get back here and chat a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I can actually give you a reason to get me back. I'm working on publishing a book. I want my story to become a book. So whether that's published or I'm gonna publish it myself, this story is gonna end up as a book, because I want people to know that there are others that's been doing this. They're not alone in this fight.
Exactly. I'm excited. You know what? I'm excited for that. I'm excited for you to venture off into that. And when you do get that book, come back on. Come back on. You got to promise me, brother. You got to promise me.
Definitely.
Yeah. So thank you so much. And we'll be talking to you soon, man.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, sir.
Thank you once again, Chris, for stopping by and sharing your heart, sharing a part of your story that sometimes isn't easy to share. Sharing the deepest secrets, is a very difficult thing, but it is necessary for the healing to take place. To be able to share these things and help other people out there is a beautiful thing. It's amazing to be able to stand up, show your scars, reach somebody, and help somebody out through your story, help somebody avoid some of the mistakes you made. And that's the whole point of this. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm trying to do, at least. Reach somebody. Touch somebody's life. Someone's heart. Let them know that you don't have to go through the things that I went through. So I hope that today's podcast did speak to you on a different level. Like I've always said, two stories aren't the same. And I hope that Chris's story has reached somebody out there. And I hope that it's kind of like a wake-up call, and it encourages you to get back up and keep going. I want you to know that I am still working on the following part to Can You Hear Me Scream? And I'm taking my time with it because I want to put some thought behind it. I want to let it simmer in my mind so I can bring something good to you. I don't want to simply bring something that's mediocre. I want to bring something that's heartfelt, that something that's relatable, something that you can apply in your life. And my wife is actually going to help me put some of that stuff down as far as communication, because after you take off your mask and after you try to talk and no one can understand you, it's learning how to communicate. That's the next step. And that next step brings a lot more healing, and it actually helps you in life so much more, being able to voice what's going on inside your head and your mind. So please be patient, and I'm going to bring that to you soon. And may God richly bless you.